Hi everyone, welcome to the Elemental Heart Wisdom Podcast. I am your host, Mara Elaine O'Grady, and in this podcast we will explore all things related to nature-based spirituality, earth wisdom traditions, embodiment tools, and the mystic traditions in order to assist you in finding your inner light and sight in these evolutionary times on our planet. Hello everyone, I'm here today with John Lockley. John is an African Zangoma in the Xhosa tradition of South Africa, and this is the same tradition that we have the likes of Desmond Tutu and Nelson Mandela as being part of that tribe. So it's a real honour to have John here today to share his wisdom and his medicine, and really to speak about the power of what he has to share around ancestry and tracking and dreams and much more, I'm sure. John has written a book called The Leopard Warrior, I believe, and it was the leopard that actually called me to find John and open the dialogue for this conversation. So, John, thank you so much for being here today with me. It's a joy to bridge with you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you. And we are, I believe you have Irish ancestry as well, which was another point of note for me with you know, what you're bringing in terms of your medicine. Is that correct?
Yes. My mom is from Dublin.
Beautiful. So you're unifying and bridging a lot of different races and traditions, I suppose, with your work.
I suppose so.
Yeah. Well, you know, John, what really spoke to me when I started listening to your stories and some other interviews that you've done is how you came to the path of being initiated as a Zangoma. And what really struck me was the power in people understanding really what a true calling to this kind of work is, and what initiation means, and that calling, because I feel like there's such glamorization in the spiritual circles in these days of what a shaman is, and also people assuming titles of shaman that really are not appropriate titles to be wielding in the world, I feel. So I'd love you to just touch upon that initiation for you, and what it really means to be initiated in that way, if you feel called to do that. Thank you.
Well, I think first for the listeners, Sangome is an African shaman, a traditional African shaman, mostly from Southern Africa. So there's a number of countries in Southern Africa, and most of them, a lot of them use the term Sangoma for someone who is an African traditional healer, or as we would say, a traditional African shaman. So in the Sangoma world, in the same as many traditional shamanic cultures, you don't decide you want to become a shaman or a Sangoma. So my path started with me going to Sangoma for a divination. And so basically the way it goes is you have a calling through illness and through dreams, and then it's important to be identified by someone in the culture who then invites you to be their apprentice, and then you train and apprentice. But we never go looking to become a Sangoma. So you don't go knocking on someone's door and say, train me to become a Sangoma. That's not what happens.
Right.
It's very important to be identified and also to be invited in. So when I went to my teacher many years ago, and I went for a divination because of a number of reasons, I wanted to have a traditional experience because of all my dreams. And I was in South Africa. I'm born and bred in South Africa. So I was at university, and my teacher was living in the village just outside the town. And so I asked someone in the psychology department, who was across a man, if he could please take me for a divination with a Sangoma in the township, which is like the village. And he said to me that he knew someone who was really, really good, And she'd helped heal his son. So then we made an appointment and I went the next day. And I just remember my teacher to be sweeping the front lawn and looking after her property and getting ready to wash the clothes and, you know, all these basic things. And she seemed quite stern, you know, and she kind of looked me up and down. And then I went in and I sat with her, and then she gave me the divination, and it was so accurate. It was so incredibly accurate, where she spoke about the last 7 years of my life. And then she said to me something very remarkable, which I've never forgotten. And she said that she had a dream the night before where the great spirit Utiko came to her and told her that she was going to apprentice someone from another culture to become a senior Sangoma like her, and that she must prepare herself for this. And then when I came through the gate, she said I was the one. And then when she sat listening to my story and feeling my energy and doing the divination, it was clear for her that I was the apprentice that she had dreamt about. So she said to me, I dreamt about you the night before. And the great spirit has called me to apprentice you. And then she said, do you want to be my apprentice? So there again is the invitation. I never went sitting there expecting or hoping to become a Sangoma. And I said, what does it mean to be a Sangoma? And she said, to be a Sangoma means you're going to stop being so sick and you're going to be able to heal people in different ways. The ancestors are going to move through you and you're going to be able to heal people in different ways. So she said to me again, do you want to become my apprentice? Do you want to become a Sangoma? So then I thought for a moment and I said, yes, yes, that sounds good, to not be sick and to be able to heal people in different ways. So then she said, okay, wonderful. We'll come tomorrow and then I'll give you your first white beads. And these beads will be a sign that you are my apprentice and that you have started the initiation process. So you've started the Twaza. The Twaza meaning that you are an initiate in the school of Sangoma. So I said, wonderful, thank you. And that's what happened. And then it was 10 years of training. I wasn't living with them for 10 years the whole time. I would often have to go overseas to work because the apprenticeship process is expensive in terms of all the ceremonies we have to do. So we have to do a number of different initiation ceremonies. And during that time, I would just rest and just be in the community. So I had to earn a living. And part of the time was also living in Ireland, as we just shared, where I was living in Galway. Yes. And I was teaching yoga in Galway. And in that way, I was bridging my mother's ancestors, who are Irish. And I was bridging my family line, the Kellys, which is a big grouping of Irish people. And I'm also an Irish citizen and have an Irish passport. So it's my second nationality. So in some ways, it was fitting and right for me to also live in Ireland. And so during those years, I would dream the ceremonies that I had to perform. And I'd often dream those ceremonies while I was in Ireland. And then I'd phone my teacher or phone her family because she doesn't speak English. And then I'd go back to South Africa and live there for a number of months, very close to her. And this went on for 10 years. So part of the process was bridging different cultures. So bridging Irish culture, bridging traditional also African culture, and learning different ways. So a Sangoma, or you could even say a traditional shaman, is someone who has to learn to bridge the different worlds and different realities in this world because of different cultural differences between people, but also in the spirit world. And the initiation process that we go through is I have to say, quite arduous. And I can't go into details because of confidentiality, but I can just say that that there are a number of different rituals and ceremonies that we have to do in order to complete the training. So there's the beginning of the training, there's the middle, and then there's the end where you are made what we call Likbichankulu, which means a senior Sangoma, who has the right and blessing of the elders to then train other people to become Sangomas. So that's a very wonderful and also very responsible position to be given that title of Likbichankulu, and being able to then baptize and offer the transmission of the Sangoma lineage to the next generation. So that is what happened to me. I've been offered that after the final ceremony in 2007. And it was really amazing because I was one of the first white people after apartheid to be given that title in that particular area. And then now there's a number of white people that have come through the training and apprenticeship in South Africa now, which is wonderful. But in those days, it was still quite unusual. And in some ways, I suppose it is still unusual because there's not, I wouldn't say a lot of people that go through this process in terms of white people. So the reason why I went through it, I have to say, is because the calling was so strong and is so strong for me in the sense that I wouldn't feel well inside me and emotionally or spiritually or psychologically unless I did the ceremonies. So the ceremonies were calling me, and the process of the ceremonies involves cleansing with plants, doing the trance dance, doing very powerful prayers, and bringing yourself into a place of humility, we say Tobeka. And then the ancestors come and reveal themselves in different ways. And for the listeners, when we say ancestors, we mean spirits or spirit guides.
Right.
But we as African people, we see the doorway of the spirit realm being held by your blood and bone people. So that's why blood ancestors is so important, because in the Western world nowadays, there is a lot of people bereft in terms of spiritually. So they might have money, or they might be able to buy iPhones and technology, but their spiritual or soul energy is quite low. So they have low spiritual self-esteem, but they have mobility and the means to be able to buy technology and live in the Western world, but they are bereft spiritually. So this is what I've found. And that process of connecting to your ancestors is also the doorway to those spirits and your spirit guides. They hold that doorway, you know. So that's why the ancestral work is very, very important.
Yeah, I feel it's the most critical work that we can do right now, really. So for you, in that respect, John, with the ancestors, our blood and bone ancestors that are holding that door, how do you recognize, or do you recognize, if some of them are unhealed ancestors, or, you know, when you are calling in the ancestors and inviting them in, are there ones that you've dealt with where there's difficulty with those ancestors in your experience, with certain ancestors?
So the rule of thumb when you're calling in your ancestors is like you're having a party. So just imagine you're having a party in Galway, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
So when you're having a party, do you just say you just want well people to come? You don't want people who are sick? You don't want people who are handicapped?
No, of course not. Yeah.
So I want you to really feel this. Yeah. This is very, very important. When you invite someone to a party in Galway, Canvara, do you just invite healed and well people? I'm asking you.
No, your heart extends, my heart would extend to all beings, to all people.
So why would you, why would you use that with your ancestors? Why would you use that, what you just asked me?
I suppose, let me rephrase that, because because that sounds actually terrible.
Because this is a very common practice in the West. And I'm not saying that people are right or wrong, because that's not my job.
Okay.
I'm just using old ways of practice, the way I was taught and the way we did it in the village and in the townships and traditional areas of South Africa.
Yes.
We would never, ever, ever say, I just want those wild ancestors to come through. And let me tell you why. Because often the sick ancestors come through us in order for us to heal them. It's not about what we can get from our ancestors, is what we can offer to them to heal them. And that's why there's so much spiritual and soul poverty in the Western world, because the mindset is consumerism. It's what can I get? And we have to change that mindset spiritually if we want to heal this world, because it's not about what you can get.
Mm.
It's about what you can give. So if you look at Ireland, incredible poverty until very recently, until the 90s, where money came into the country. And I know the story of Ireland intimately because my mother is 87 years old and is brought up in the old Irish way. So I asked her one day when she was walking in the streets of Galway, I said to her, "Mom, how do you find it now?" Because there was the hustle and bustle and the wealth and everything else. And she can see how Ireland has changed so much.
Yeah.
And she said, "Ah, sure, John." She said, "In the past, we had no choice. We had the church and we had the government, and everyone was telling us what to do. Ah, you can go here. Ah, you can go there. And we had no choice because we were poor. Now people have money and they have a choice. They have a choice to be humble, or they have a choice to be arrogant. They have a choice to be greedy. They have a choice to help other people." She says, "Ireland is great because we all have a choice now." So when we are working with ancestors, we have a choice. How do we operate with them? How do we engage with them? But from an ancient culture in South Africa, from the Xhosa people, from Mandela's people, what I can say to you is, when you are inviting in your ancestors, you never just say, "I want the well people. I want those who aren't alcoholics. I want those who haven't had TB. I want those who are happy. I want those who are not depressed." You never, ever, ever do that.
You say,
"I welcome you all. And
yes.
I praise you for surviving so that I can be here today." Because, you know, the pain in Ireland, a lot of people are experiencing that spiritually now, because their parents and grandparents and great-grandparents were not able to experience that because of poverty. They were in survival mode, and they were in survival mode for over 800 years because of colonization, because of what happened in terms of English occupation. And that is real. These things are very real. So once you get to a family grouping where the people are suddenly okay and they don't have to worry about getting food for their children and education and all of that, then all those old memories of pain start to surface. And we have to identify that as, is it your personal pain? Is it the pain of your own life and your own story? Or is it ancestral pain that's coming up? And for a lot of people, I feel there's this confusion between ancestral pain and personal pain. Mm. And the way we heal that ancestral pain is to feel it and light a candle to our ancestors.
Mm.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I absolutely receive that, John. And I suppose my question was, the way that came out, I'm glad that that has stirred that, because that needed to be spoken. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm deep in the work of ancestral reconciliation and healing myself, and steeped in it. And my question was more around the way you're calling in your ancestors and how you reconcile, I suppose, those parts of the ancestry that need that love, how you do that in your tradition.
Well, it's different from each person. So even in the Sangoma tradition, even in the same village, you're going to have, and even in the same family of Sangomas, you're going to have people working slightly differently because of their relationship to their spirits. We could say their ancestors. So first you appease your blood ancestors and you make an offering to them, and then you watch and see what comes from there, what comes through the doorway. So it's like a doorway, and you can just imagine it's a doorway, you know, it's got left and right and male and female, and you make an offering to the doorway. literally we make an offering to the door as we're opening the sacred space. And then we watch and listen to our dreams and we see what ancestors come through. I've heard situations where sometimes there are sick ancestors that have come through, and even where there's been an argument between two different spirits or two different ancestral groups, and that has come through in the dreams. And then we do a ritual to deal with that. So it's a bit like mindfulness meditation. You feel the energies that are coming up, and then you deal with them in terms of the breath. But in this case, it's doing a ritual where we invoke in all the ancestors, and then we invoke the Great Spirit. And then we talk about what we are seeing in terms of maybe disharmony between the ancestors. And then we call on harmony and we call on peace. And then we deal with it. So it's different from person to person. So all I say to people is love your ancestors. Love the people you come from, you know, and the more people love their ancestors, then we're going to have less conflict in the world in terms of human conflict, because human conflict between different groups of people, the root of it is disharmony in the family. Because if you love your family and you love where you come from, you're not going to really want to attack and hurt other people if it's genuine love, you know.
That's so true.
So to answer your question, it's on a case-by-case basis. What we do is we love all our ancestors and we invoke them, and then we watch to see what comes through the doorway.
Okay.
Because it's different. And each person has a different spiritual development. So for one person, they might have, let's say, alcoholic ancestors coming through who are full of like heavy energy, which is going through the initiate, going through the person who's dreaming. And then they bring that story to the teacher and we listen to that. And then we'll go, okay, we need to do some ceremony here. So then we will do a series of ceremonies based on that, and also cleanses. So physical cleanses. And what we do with that ancestor who is sick, we appease them. We tell them they are safe, that they are welcome. And we ask them, how can we help you? And then we offer them food and we offer them cleansing herbs. And then we also invoke the Great Spirit and other ancestors to assist them. So it's basically in English language or Western language, you could say that we invite them to face the light, you know, face the setting sun.
Yes.
But we don't do it in that particular way, because that's I don't want to go into semantics, but in essence, that's what we do. But the way we do it is we invite in all the ancestors, we invite in the Great Spirit, and we tell that sick ancestor who maybe has some kind of problem when they're alive, like maybe alcoholism, we tell them that they are safe, that they are loved, that they are here, and what can we do to help them? Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you, John.
Because if we only want to invite well ancestors, then we are just perpetuating the situation that we are having in the world right now, in the physical waking world. Because the dream time or the spirit world is mirroring this world. And this world is also mirroring the spirit world. So in order for us to have more of a magical experience as human beings, as you know, in Ireland, it's got a very magical history. For us to maintain the magical history of the land in Ireland and to go deeper with it, we need to go deeper with our spiritual practice. We need to go deeper with ancestral practice and open these spaces and these portals so this ancient wisdom can come through unencumbered, without judgment and without discrimination. That's very important, unencumbered, without judgment and without discrimination, based on health, color, culture, any of that, you know?
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Yeah. Received and heard deeply. And the ancestors
and also have to
clapping.
Laugh. We also have to laugh. And this is the one thing I love in Ireland, is the medicine of humor, the medicine of music. And the medicine of humor. because sometimes when people get into deep shamanic work or ancestral work, people always worried in the West, especially about doing the right thing. And I always say, don't worry about that. Just be playful and be loving and have the right intention. And a lot of good medicine can come from that, because we can do these very intensive ceremonies in South Africa. And my friends and my Sangoma elders are very focused, but they're also incredibly playful and very compassionate. And that playful energy is actually the juice and electricity behind the medicine.
Yes, isn't that so true? It is.
It's so important, yeah.
It is, for sure. And it's definitely alive here in Ireland. There's a lot of trickster elemental energies that make sure you laugh at yourself if you're getting too serious, for sure. Wow, well, you know, I love that, John. And I presume then for you, like somebody could come to you and do a personal session with you around healing the ancestors and go deeper with practices with you if they wanted to. Is that right?
Yes. I do a lot of private sessions around this. And I'm also doing a 7-week course with a Shift Network, which is starting in a couple of weeks. Yes. So it's a 7-week course on ancestral healing and aspects of how to heal our ancestors. And all people need to do is go onto my website, johnlockley.com, and you'll see the upcoming 7-week course there.
Beautiful. And is that held in a live container, John, or is it recorded?
Yes, that's online, so it's recorded. Great. And so I'll be sitting with people every week, like I'm sitting with you, and yep. And that will be recorded, and there will be homework, and it'll be held in a particular way, the way the Shift Network does it, which is very good. And it's very worthwhile. So I do recommend it for anyone who's Great. Interested in healing their ancestors, or interested in African shamanism or mysticism or dreams. This is this is my first course that I've done like this online after 25 years of being a Sangoma. So so it's very historical for me and very auspicious. So I welcome all the listeners to join me on this course.
Beautiful. Great.
Especially
John.
My Irish family, you know.
Yeah, there, you. Exactly. Okay. Get the call out to the
Come
Irish.
And join me. Don't be afraid. Because I am a Kelly. I mean,
well,
I'm a Kelly.
Well, there you go.
What can
I know.
I say?
So do you feel like people are afraid, like that there is a fear around perceptions of African shamanism?
Yes.
Okay.
People are afraid of African shamanism. People are afraid of ancestors. People are afraid of themselves. And people are afraid of their shadows.
Yeah. Oh, all of the above.
And then you say, geez, give me a drink, you know, because, oh my God, this is too much here.
It's too much. I can't deal with it. Oh, gosh. So,
all I can say is, amen. I hear you. You know, I was afraid during my training, but I was also full of joy. And the fear, we have to distinguish fear. That is fear that is the doorway to you connecting with your personal power. And there's going to be some fear to that. And it's a bit of fear, like, I don't know if any of you, I don't know if people have experienced playing sport, but I remember when I used to do run in athletics at school and play competitive sport. And there's always a little bit of fear before the race started. And I used to love the 800 meter race. I used to love it. And it was difficult. You had to be really fit. And there's always these nervous tension before the race started, you know. And afterwards, when the race is over, you go, oh, thank God, that was amazing, you know. So it's a bit like that with deeper ancestral work. And when the work is serious, there's going to be a little bit of fear because it's serious and because it's that opportunity for you to connect with the real power that you are born with. And a lot of people are afraid of their own power. And sure, didn't Nelson Mandela say that? He said the biggest problem is people are afraid of their own power. So the doorway to that power is honoring your ancestors. And that's the same in all cultures, not just Africa. It's all traditional shamanism. It's deep in the fabric of Ireland in terms of Celtic mythology and Celtic spirituality. The doorway to the spirit realm is opened through your reverence and just respect to your own people, to your ancestors. So don't be afraid. Come join me. A ceremony is people joining together in prayer with from different ancestral groups, from different cultural groups, and it's international. So everyone is welcome. And I'll also be singing songs and chants. And the system of earth-based shamanism, the system is actually very, very simple. It's not complicated. It's only three things. It's you as an individual making a decision to connect to your immortality, to your soul, the spirit inside of you that doesn't die. So first you make that decision. And then the second thing, the second gateway, is people looking at their life force and how it is created. So then turning to their ancestors and invoking them, mom and dad, male, female. And then the third is that sense of looking upwards and invoking in the great spirit. So that's all cultures, all traditional shamanic cultures. That's the way it goes. So I'll be going into this with people on my 7-week course.
It sounds amazing. And it is, it's the recognition, I suppose, of that interconnectivity of all of life. And if any one part is left out, it's not going to flow, right?
That's right. Yes, that's right. So that first pulse, because it's like you're looking at like organisms in the sea or any life form, is that pulse, that life force, that pulse. So it's like your first pulse inside of you is you feeling your own heartbeat and then feeling your intention and feeling your will. Like, do you want to connect to your immortality? Do you want to connect to that part of you that doesn't die, that asks the question of why do I eat every day? Why? What is the purpose of my life? Mm-hmm. If that's an important question for you, then to answer that question means to then honor your ancestors, because it's all part of that. So then you honor your mom and dad, and then you invoke the Buddha or the Great Spirit. And sure, this is how my journey started. And so that's, to keeping it simple and not being afraid or fear, but listening to your fear. And is it real? Is it real? Like, are you afraid of something because it's dark and it's evil or it's dangerous? Or are you afraid of something because it's something that's hidden inside of you, and it's the doorway to your own power and your own mystery? And sometimes people can't distinguish those fears,
Yes. I mean, that void place is a scary place for a lot of people. Hence the need to disassociate and find other ways to avoid it. I really feel that. That's so powerful. And I love, we have that tradition here in Ireland, as you know, of going down into the earth and into the mounds and into those places to really connect with that darkness. And I'm sure you have similar, different rituals over there in South Africa for connecting with the darkness within yourself.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. I think mostly once you invoking your ancestors, then a lot of feelings can come up. And so for us in the traditional way, we don't give too much energy to emotions. Okay, this is quite interesting, because it's just accepted that when you're working with ancestors, it's going to be emotional. So we don't give energy to it. So we don't sit down and say, oh, I'm feeling angry, I'm feeling sad, I'm feeling anxious. We don't discuss any of that, interesting enough. We don't give energy to it. The only thing is we'll say is, well, you're working with your ancestors, so that's normal to feel all these things. So there's no need to discuss it.
just feel it.
Yeah, just feel it. And then we'll say it's perfectly normal. To feel angry before a ceremony, it's perfectly normal, but don't take that anger out on someone else. If you're feeling that anger, then here's some medicinal plants, wash your body with the plants and the herbs, and do some prayers to your ancestors and the Great Spirit. But if you suddenly lash out at someone, we're like, no, that's not right. Stop. You know.
Okay.
Those energies, as people invoke their ancestors, it can be very emotional for people. And you'll see with my closer friends, they will be very emotional. And in their normal day-to-day life, they're not emotional. But when they are invoking the ancestors, there's this quality of deep, deep tenderness and deep vulnerability that comes in. And then there's also this incredible power. So there's two things: deep vulnerability and tenderness, and this incredible power. And you see both. It's like quite incredible. So for those people who are new on the path, all I can say is that is perfectly normal and it's part of being a human being. Just be careful about those emotions, because sometimes people go into their emotional body and then they create a story and they say, oh, this work is not right because I'm feeling so upset, and oh, my ancestors are this or they're that. Stop. This is normal. You're a human being. You're honoring those people who haven't been honored in the Western world for over 2,000 years. You know, Western culture, we used to honor our ancestors.
Yes.
This is part of the sickness in the Western world.
Yeah. So the importance of reconnecting and really just figuring out who you are and loving all of those beings. And maybe would you suggest setting up an ancestral altar or something at home, something simple?
Yes. An ancestral altar is very helpful to create something with soil and with stones, something which is of the land, because when we die, we're going to become soil and earth.
Yes.
So it's a good reminder of the practice to have. I have a little altar, which is just a plate of soil and a candle. And that's it, you know.
Perfect. It doesn't need to be much at all, really. I suppose it's the intention. It. Yeah. Thank you, John. I know that there's infinite more around ancestry, and that I really, for people to dive in more with you in your programs would be phenomenal. I know that you do retreats in the Kalahari Desert, so the tracking with nature, the inner tracking and the outer tracking with the animals. And I'd love you to speak to the importance of that, because I'm such a nature advocate in my own healing and awakening journey, how that works with people and really the importance of that in these times.
Yes, well, we do a retreat. So I host a retreat in the Kalahari, two retreats, and it's 7 days. And the focus of the retreat is inner tracking and outer tracking. So the inner tracking is where I take people to a shrine house in the bush, and we go into the shrine for about 2 hours every day. And that's where I teach them about ancestors and how to connect with their ancestors. And then I give them little assignments to go into nature and to do some practices around that. And then I teach them about dreams and how to connect with their dreams. And then we work with medicinal plants, and we'd work with prayer and with ritual and ceremony. So that's all about connecting to the inner tracking. So the inner tracking is, what is your purpose? Why are you here? What is your connection to your ancestors? What are your gifts? And to open up your gifts, to open up your spiritual connection. But most importantly, to connect to your immortality, to connect to the dreamer inside of you that is connected to all the worlds, to connect to your soul. So that's what the inner tracking, the focus of the inner tracking is. And then the outer tracking is much easier. And the outer tracking is where we follow the animals and we go on walks through the desert for 2 hours in the morning, and then in the afternoon or early evening, we walk just on foot and in silence, and we follow the tracks in the sand. So we might follow a cheetah. We'll follow all kinds of different antelope, and we will just observe them and learn from them, because the animals are teaching us. So how can we get back into balance with nature as human beings? We need to listen to the natural world. So that sense of listening needs to be developed a little bit more for us. So the practice of walking to the bushveld is the practice of like a walking meditation. We don't talk much, and we listen to the sounds of the animals. And then the lead tracker, who is a San Bushman, and then the other tracker, is two trackers. They will both point out certain things in the sand and talk about various animals and where they're moving and what they're doing. And as we do that every day, people start to attune themselves to nature and to what's happening around them. And it's a beautiful practice, because that also helps to inform the inner tracking. It helps people to let go. And often if people are running around in the first world or in the modern world, their nervous systems are, and their adrenals on overdrive.
Yeah.
So as we're walking on the land every day, there's a sense of calmness that starts to descend in people. Mm-hmm. And that over-amped nervous system starts to calm down. And as that happens, then people start to receive dreams, and they start to connect to their immortality, to their soul, to their spirit. So I'm using that word, the soul and the spirit. I suppose that's crosser, but it's also Irish, in the sense that if you read any of John O'Donohue's work from yes. Listinvana, it's the soul is calling us. Mm-hmm. And that's my Irish mystical side coming through, and from my own dreams, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And our soul is calling us. And how can we hear the whisper in the wind? How can we hear that amidst the noise of the world? So going to the Kalahari, which is it's very natural. It's like going to the Garden of Eden. There's no buildings. It hasn't been tainted in any shape or form. There's no industrialization. There's no industry. It's like going to a natural place that's been like that for thousands of years. And just being on the land,
yeah,
it's like going into the Garden of Eden, and it helps people to reset themselves to that way of innocence and that way of newness and that way of listening to their spirit. And it changes people's lives. It changes people's lives. So I do these retreats every year. You can look at my website. I do them in February and March. Every year I do the dreams and tracking, and there's still spaces available. And then I do another retreat in May in South Africa, which is a walking retreat. So it's 8 days, the one in May, and it's 3 days of camping and sleeping under the stars, just on a mat and around a little fire. But it's a wild area. So there's lions, there's leopards, it's full on wild. Okay. And we'll have guard duty. So each person will be given a chance to be vigilant, to be vigilant and to be on guard for wild animals that might come in. And it's a good practice for people. You know, it's very good practice. And again, it's life-changing for people. Yeah. So it's incredible.
Amazing. You're definitely going to meet your edges on guard duty if you're holding space for that. That's incredible. I feel the potency of that, and also the potency of the organic intelligence of the land and how that interacts with your field. Oh, just amazing. So it's, as I said earlier to you, it's on my bucket list if I can get there. So thanks, John. Amazing.
Yeah.
So,
and we also, with the dreams and tracking, we have the San Bushmen, who are reputed to be the oldest living indigenous tribe in the world today. And their culture is under threat for a number of reasons. And but we are very lucky to have their inputs and their skill and their teaching on the retreat as well. And I managed this year to have an incredible experience with one of the elders, one of the San elders, who asked if he could participate in the shrine tent. And this had never been done before. They'd never asked to participate like this. But then the retreat I'm offering is not being done anywhere else. So I said, yes, of course. And then he came with his family and community members. And there was about 10 of them. And it was so beautiful. And it actually culminated, and it helped to bring forth a vision that I'd had for many years, for modern and ancient man to sit around a fire in a circle to revision our humanity. So it helped manifest this vision I've had for many years. And it happened this year after my 7th retreat in the Kalahari. It happened.
Wow.
And we were there around the shrine, around the fire, around the candle. And we practiced for 3 hours together. And as the ceremony came to an end, I shook the elder's hand, the cow is his name. And I gave him a gift of a Sangoma fabric. And then I looked outside the tent, and there was this vulture that came flying low, low, low towards us. And then it came up. And the vulture is very symbolic, and it represents new beginnings and new life. And so it's very exciting, very exciting. I'm still very excited. So you guys hear this message, then join us in the Kalahari.
That's incredible. And what recognition as well of your own path and your own dreaming in manifesting that, you know, that's a beautiful synergy. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you.
Fabulous. Well, wow, John, I know we've only a little bit more time together, and I just feel I would love to round this off and finish this off with some sort of a blessing or whatever wants to come through. I know the power of sound and chant and drum that moves through you, from what I've heard, is just such a powerful blessing to hear. So for anyone that's feeling called to John's work, please, please, please check him out. Go to his website. He's got his book there. I think you've an audio book as well, and audio teachings, and also retreats and personal sessions as well. Oh, beautiful.
Book Leopard Warrior. It's a bit backwards.
Fabulous. No, we got it. We got it. So thank you, John. We'll put all the links for that attached to this video. So yeah, whatever you feel called.
I'm just going to do a bit of drumming. So this is
my drum.
That'd
be great. Beautiful.
And it's hard to see it with the
What skin is it, John? I know.
That's a cow. Yeah, it's cow skin.
Okay. Is there a significance with cow for the drum?
No, generally we just, well, I suppose cow is one of the sacred animals we use. But also the skin is strong, and that's what we tend to make the big drums out of.
Right, right.
Okay, so here's just a little chant, a little blessing chant. So just feeling your breath, feeling your heartbeat, feeling your nervous system and the blood and bones. And just breathe into the space of you, whoever you are, wherever you are. Just honor this special life that you've been given, this sacred life. And then when I drum, I invoke the old people, we say, the ancestors, because we wouldn't be here without them. So we invite our humanity to join us. We invite our people to join us with a sense of celebration, like a party, okay? And where everyone is welcome, doesn't matter who you are, sick, healthy, old or young, whoever's on the other side that needs to come through, we invite you all through in the spirit of Ubuntu, the spirit of humanity. And when that happens, then we listen to the dreams. And we see who's coming and what are they saying. Okay, so here we go. And when we say ancestors in Africa, we also mean nature spirits, okay? So sometimes the dreams we have are the dreams of animals and or the dreams of plants. Okay, so that's exciting. So here we go. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah,
Rabazali bammo, bammo, yabazali bammo, bammo. Hey, yabazali bammo, bammo, yabazali bammo, bammo, yabazali bammo, bammo. Hey, volen le lam nyangi, hey, volen le lam nyangi, volen le lam nyangi.
So just feeling your heart, feeling your breath, and offering a prayer to your people, wherever they are, whoever they are welcome into the circle. They are welcome. We say, Wamkelekile, Amanyange, welcome to the ancestors. Wamkelekile, Amanyange. Nceda bantu ukuhamba phambile, nceda bantu ukufunda ubuntu bunzulu. Help the people to move upwards so that they can learn the teachings of humanity, ubuntu ubunzulu. So thank you.
Thank you, John. Beautiful. I'm there with them. That's really, really beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Just a precious gift for all that received that. And yeah, thank you for your presence today. I'm just very grateful, yeah, to make that connection. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Thank you.